flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're taking trips around the National Football League to get you ready for Wild Card Weekend. The weekend is no longer super. It used to be super. It really did used to be super. It is not super anymore. Let's head to the phone lines right now to be joined by a friend of the show, Landry Locker, as the Texans get ready for their matchup against the Los Angeles Chargers. You can catch that game Saturday at 3:30. Landry, man, happy to have you join us today, man. We appreciate you.
It's still super. Don't get cocky because you get to sit it out. It's still a super weekend. Let's not get carried away, Carrington.
Okay, my apologies. All I'm saying is the actual league doesn't call it Super Wild Card Weekend anymore. It's just Wild Card Weekend now.
Fair enough.
Landry, this is the thing. I was joking a little bit, and now maybe I'm being a little high and mighty because I'm in Kansas City and I can get that. You know how in the NBA every year somebody has to play that playoff series on NBA TV, and it's usually the Atlanta Hawks. Like, the Atlanta Hawks or the Orlando Magic, they always got to play that series on NBA TV. I feel like that's what the Texans are to the first playoff game. That's how I know the NFL playoffs are here, that the Texans are going to play the first playoff game. I saw a stat. They've done it like 7 consecutive times.
They've literally never played their opening playoff game not in this slot. And that goes back to the entire history. So it is pretty fascinating. I think it speaks to the overall just really mediocrity of 2 decades. You haven't been to a conference championship, haven't really been, you know, that highly sought after. The division's been bad, but it's literally never happened, you know, and the entire time watching, covering, they've always been in this slot. So it's a real thing. It is a thing. It's how you kind of stumble into the playoffs and it kind of work your way up. But it has been the appetizer every time they've been in the playoffs.
Are Houston fans happy? And I ask that question because obviously expectations change. 2 years ago, if I tell Houston fans, you're going to go to the playoffs in back-to-back years, one of those years you're going to win a playoff game, every Houston fan would have taken it. But with the expectations coming into the season, I wonder if Houston fans are happy with the way that this season has played itself out.
I think there's apathy. You know, I think it feels familiar. I think your long-term ceiling is higher than it once was. But there is kind of some apathy for a large chunk of the fan base and really the portion of the fan base that I interact the most with on a daily basis. There is that tendency to kind of go back 2 years to kind of appreciate where you are and you didn't think you would be there. But, you know, right now, just for the short term, you feel like you might have a chance on Saturday. You don't feel like you have a chance really of getting to the AFC Championship game, although who knows? Like, maybe you can flip the switch and figure something out. But it just kind of feels familiar, whether it's Kubiak days where you weren't able to get there, whether it's O'Brien, you're in a bad division, it's a dumpster fire division, you win that division, and it just feels familiar. We talked about the familiarity of when they're starting to play, just the overall feel of the short-term ceiling of this team does seem familiar. But in that same breath, you do feel like you have a higher long-term ceiling. But in the short term, I would agree that there is a little bit of apathy and, oh, this is kind of a familiar area.
This is aside from kind of the playoff conversation, but I am curious, now that one of the jobs is open, which organization do Houston fans feel like is close? Like, I look at Jacksonville, they just fired their head coach. Maybe they get the right head coach and they're back on the right path. Tennessee seems absolutely lost, but they do have the first pick in the draft. Maybe they go get Cam Ward and he turns things around. And the Colts, they recently spent the top 5 pick, but I don't really know if they have a great direction either. Is there any organization, any program in that division that gives Houston fans any worry moving forward?
I wouldn't say so. I think it kind of feels like they're all in no man's territory. Like the Colts, just ever since Andrew Luck retired in the preseason, they've just kind of been, you know, struggling to find the quarterback. I will say the Texans have only won a few more games than in the last couple of years, and I think Steichen's still a good coach. The Titans have one of the worst owners in sports. She doesn't get enough credit for the poor job she's done and the offseason that they had, where it looked like they were going to rebuild, and then all of a sudden they're paying top money for free agents as if they're a player or two away. So they're kind of a disaster. Jacksonville, they're a good team. Like, if you told me Jacksonville wins the division next year, it wouldn't be the most shocking thing, but it just kind of feels like we know what Trevor Lawrence is, and we have no idea. The concern for Texans fans right now, though, is you don't feel as good about C.J. Stroud, regardless of the why. Like, there's a lot of stuff around him. But last year, you just felt like you were on the fast track towards him joining that top quarterback tier. And right now, I would say that he's facing off against someone who he's in the same tier with on Saturday in Justin Herbert. We're no longer talking about Allen, Mahomes, Jackson trying to get up there. You're kind of in that same tier with Herbert. So it's easy to look at those teams and say, you know, none of these teams are like a legit threat of reaching the ultimate prize. But I think the questions about the Texans, and also they're going to have to start paying guys. Derek Stingley's an all pro. He just got that. He was healthy all year. You're going to have to start paying him. You're going to have to start paying these guys. The concern, like, if you're keeping your eyes on your own paper, is are the Texans, if this continues, like, from year to year, how you feel now versus last year, what makes you any better than where the Jags are right now? I think that's the real question.
Right now, we're talking to our guy Landry Locker. He is down in Houston. We're taking a closer look at the wild card weekend, the Houston Texans. They have a home game coming up on Saturday against the Los Angeles Chargers. All right, back to the playoffs, back to Houston. Can you see a possibility of Houston even making a run? You got a good coach. You got a good quarterback. This is a team that went to the postseason last year. Could you see a chance where, if there is a surprise team, kind of like a Tennessee from a couple of years ago. Remember, Tennessee made that run to the AFC championship game. Do you think it's possible to be the Houston Texans?
I think it is, but I think, you know, Tennessee was, they were just physically dominant. And I think that was kind of their identity. I think if it does happen, I think it looks like 2018 Jacksonville, where, you know, they kind of had that ho-hum opening matchup. I think they won the game 9-7 against Buffalo. And then they just completely demolished the Steelers in the next round. Or even kind of the Rex Ryan Jets. This is a really good defense. Like, that's what this looks like if the Texans make a run. They have a completely healthy front seven for the first time all season. D'Amico Ryans is going to get to see what it looks like with Christian Harris and Azeez Al-Shaair on the field at the same time. So they have that. It's going to look more like, I would say 2018 Jacksonville, where the defense creates the opportunities and you're able to kind of win kind of a hard-fought game against the Chargers, and then maybe you make Mahomes look uncomfortable, which is way easier said than done, especially with how rested they're going to be. But I think that's what it looks like. I think it looks like the Rex Ryan Jets or the Jags, because I don't think they're going to physically dominate people on the offensive side of the rock and run the ball like Tennessee was able to do.
How are the Texans managing without having Tank Dell? That injury happened in Kansas City. It was a gruesome injury, one of the more gruesome injuries that happened this year in the National Football League. They were already out Diggs. They then went out a couple weeks after that and just got absolutely blown out by the Baltimore Ravens. How are they recovered from the Tank Dell injury? Who are the pieces that are replacing Tank Dell?
See, the thing about that, and I don't want to let them off the hook, because even before Tank got hurt, and that was really the best we saw of Tank Dell against Kansas City, he was kind of a non-factor in more games than he was an actual factor. Like, he had a game where he didn't have a catch. He had a game where he had a catch for minus 3 yards. He had another game where he had one catch. And he had another game where he had two catches. So the offense has not functioned at a high level at any point this season, whether they've had Nico Collins, Stephon Diggs, and Tank Dell, whether they lost Stephon Diggs, whether they lost Nico Collins. So the offense pretty much looks the exact same. They did add Deontay Johnson. Don't know how much they're going to rely on him, but skill position wise, I think the Texans, if you take away RB1 and WR1, even when Tank was here, I would say it's the least flattering group of skill position guys, maybe in the entire league. So I obviously you'd rather have him. And if what we saw against Kansas City was going to be something they were going to build on, that would be great. But even before that, this offense has struggled in virtually every category. I mean, they're well into the bottom half of the NFL all season long in pretty much every category that you look at.
Last thing here, Landry, and we appreciate your time. I see this game is pretty simple against the Chargers. The Chargers have a better coach. The Chargers have a better quarterback. The Chargers have a better defense. They're also the healthier of the two teams. I think the Chargers go into Houston, and I think they win. I look at that, and maybe I'm just overvaluing the two times recently that I watched them. They looked lifeless against the Baltimore Ravens on Christmas Day, and they really collapsed down the stretch against Kansas City. I just can't see them getting it up to beat a Chargers team that I actually think has a lot of nice pieces and nice parts. I think the Chargers win this game something like 27-14, somewhere in that range.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, Jim Harbaugh has never lost his first playoff game, and quite frankly, every year but one, he's been in the conference championship as a coach. So he definitely has the experience. I do think you're kind of sleeping on the Texans defense. I think the Texans defense and the kind of quarterback that Justin Herbert is, they can make him struggle. But as far as everything else you said, I can't disagree. I'm actually doing kind of a dangerous hedge on this. I'm betting on the Chargers -3, and I'm betting on the Texans money line to where if the Chargers cover, then it's no bet. Look, it'll end up canceling out, and if the Texans win, then it's like an extra, I don't know, 30% of whatever you betted before. So that's the profit. So that's kind of where I am. I could see it going either way. I do think the Texans front seven could be a problem for Justin Herbert, and I don't know that the Chargers can run the ball as much as they would like. And Quentin Johnston not playing would be a little bit bigger than people think too, because then you could put Stingley fully on McConkey. But I could easily see this going either way. I don't want to sit on the fence. No result would surprise me in this game.
I know you and I are from the same era of hip hop, so I'll get you out of here with this. Do you like this LiAngelo Ball song?
Yes, and the Texans did too. They were playing it at practice. I got to tell you, it's got kind of a little Nelly-ish feel and like some new age type of thing. It would be the easiest low-hanging fruit to hate on it. I don't think it's bad. I do not think it's bad.
It is unusually catchy in a way that if you had told me 3 months ago, hey, LiAngelo's going to make a ball, like, is going to make a song that you like, I mean, get out of here. There's no chance I like this song. Then I heard it. I'm like, you know what? This song's actually not that bad. I kind of like it.
Yeah, let me put it this way. And this is maybe me transitioning into where we came from to now and being get off my lawn guy. I've heard a lot worse these days released. I'll just put it that way.
That is my guy Landry Locker joining us on the show. He covers the Texans. They kick off the playoffs as they usually do. They play the Chargers on Saturday. Landry, great stuff, man. I appreciate you.
All right, man. Enjoy that throne that you're on. Enjoy that throne.
I will, Landry. I appreciate that. That's Landry Locker joining us on the show. I just think the Texans are very blah right now. Like, I'm looking at all 14 teams in the postseason, and there's just not really anything about the Texans that really excites me. I know they have a good quarterback, but I don't think they can block. I don't think they can protect them. I'm trying to figure out who the weapons are. Like, I'm not entirely sure that they can score a whole lot of points. I do think their defense is good, but if I had to make like a exciting ranking of teams in the playoffs, they're near the bottom of it. There's no sizzle to me. There's no steak to me with this Houston Texans team. They're just very blah to me. The Chargers are interesting. Harbaugh, Herbert trying to get his first postseason win. The Chargers have one of the best defenses in the postseason. The Chargers are kind of interesting to me. I don't really feel that way about Houston. They're very blah. Very blah to me. Coming up on the other side, we'll get back to the survey that the Chiefs sent out asking your opinion about their future regarding their stadium. We'll get to that. They offered up three options, but I actually think they're the wrong three options. We'll talk about it. Keep it right here on 96.5 The Fan.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
This man was a bona fide scrub.
On 96.5 The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Someone on the text line says, CDOT, what? You find the Chargers interesting? Now, I know that you guys like to have fun at my expense, but I would like to point out that, I mean, there were only three teams in the AFC that won more games than the Chargers did. they were the three contending teams. Kansas City, Buffalo, and Baltimore. I don't think the Chargers can win the Super Bowl or anything, but the Chargers are certainly interesting. They're interesting. The Chargers allowed fewer points than those three teams that I mentioned, and they got a capable quarterback. The Chargers are kind of intriguing heading into the postseason. If there is a team to me that is playing in wild card weekend that is above, like outside of the contending teams, you and I talk about that VIP room of teams. So Kansas City, Baltimore, Buffalo, Detroit, Philadelphia. I think most people would agree those are the five best teams in the National Football League. Those are the teams that we actually think can do something. If there is a team that is outside of that that I think has the best chance of possibly going on a run, I actually think it's the Chargers out of those. Good coach, good quarterback, good defense, just good enough to put a scare into any team that they could possibly play in the second round. Now, I might end up looking goofy, and they might end up losing on the road to the Houston Texans. I mean, they are the Chargers for all of us, but I just, the Chargers are interesting this year. Won 11 games, good coach, good quarterback, good defense. They have, I think, a pretty favorable matchup in round one. I'm not really sold on this Houston team. I think the Chargers are interesting. At least I do. All right, let's get back to the Chiefs and let's talk about this survey that they put together. So the Chiefs put out a survey. I'm sure you can find it at this point if you really, really want to find it. And it was about their stadium and the future of them as an organization and what you want them to do, what your ideas, what your thoughts, your suggestions. It was all of those things. And one part of the survey that I found pretty interesting, Rob, was in this survey, it was three options of where you want the stadium to be. It was at the Truman Sports Complex, new location in Missouri, also new location in Kansas. And you had to rank them 1, 2, and 3. You guys will probably find this crazy. New location in Missouri is actually my least favorite option. Now, you guys know, I voted yes on the tax. I didn't love the idea of the tax, but I do want the teams to stay on the Missouri side as somebody who has lived in Missouri every day of my life. But if you were telling me that the option for the Chiefs is, if these are my only two options, I don't think it is, but follow me here. If the two options are the Chiefs are not going to play at the Truman Sports Complex in any capacity and they want to move somewhere else in Missouri or move out by the Legends, I would take for them to move out by the Legends. The only real knock to the Legends to me at this point is just a pride thing. Like, I want the teams to be there. But don't tell anybody, them moving to Kansas is not the worst thing that could possibly happen. I mean, I go out there for other things. I've gone out there for sporting. I've gone out there for concerts. I've gone out there. It ain't like we're not accustomed to hopping on the highway and driving over there for something. I don't really know what would make this that different. So I don't want them to go over there, but there already is an infrastructure that's in place that would make a lot of sense if that's where they wanted to move. I don't really know where that place is on the Missouri side. Maybe there is a part of the city that I am completely neglecting. You guys can tell me. Text line 913-586-7965. Maybe you guys can tell me where you think that is, but I don't think that there is a logical place to put the football stadium if it's not where it currently is. So with all that, and you got to build up all of the other things around it, you're not just plopping the stadium there. I think you're going to want to build some things around it. And at least the last time that we had this conversation with the Chiefs, they made it kind of clear that they don't want to build all of those other things. Remember, for the renovations, I think a lot of us thought, oh, well, this is their time to build all of the things that they never could build now with the Royals gone. At least that's not what the rendering that they had the last time looked like. I don't even know what their plan was for what Kauffman Stadium when eventually the Royals move out of Kauffman Stadium. I still don't really know what their plan is. So, Rob, I am not really excited about new location in Missouri. I don't really know where it would be. I don't know if it makes a lot of sense. The current setup that they have is the best setup that they could possibly have. I think it's even better than them moving to Kansas. You have all this space, all this room. Everybody's been going there now for our entire lives. The highway system, everything makes sense for you just to stay where you are. But if you're not going to stay there, the only place that offers you anything comparable to what you have is moving out by the Legends. There's the highway right there. There's NASCAR right there. There's the Legends right there. I imagine other things will be out there now that you're adding an NFL team out there. That's the second best place for them to be.
So I don't disagree with you, but I want you to know that I'm saying that as a Kansan. But if I were a person who lived in Missouri and lived in Jackson County, I would be worried. Because let's say the Chiefs get back the survey results. It went out to season ticket members, went out to people who I believe have gone to a certain amount of games based on the app. There's an algorithm for who did get this survey. Let's say the survey goes exactly how you say, hey, you know, Joe Fan lives in Jackson County, and he says, yes, number one is renovate, number two is Kansas, number three is other place in Missouri, because it doesn't make any sense for it to go another place in Missouri. If that data gets back to the Chiefs, and the Chiefs are then looking at the data, and it says, the top two options for our fan base is, in some order, renovate or go to Kansas, doesn't that mean it's just a matter of what the best deal is for the team? And if you, and I don't think you feel this way, but if you are a hardliner, it is never going to go to Kansas, I don't want it to go to Kansas, no, no, no on Kansas, and you have that survey, you better be voting Kansas third, because if it comes down to best possible deal, we know what Kansas can offer via star bonds and tax break and all those things. Those are things the Truman Sports Complex cannot offer. And if I'm Clark Hunt and I get the data back and it says my fans are cool, 1-2, Truman Sports Complex or Kansas, it looks like it could end up in Kansas. So if you're a Missouri hardliner, you can't be voting the way that you're saying, despite the fact what you're saying makes logical sense to me.
Yeah, but even then, I guess I understand why they put it on the survey. But give me the other location. Like right now on the text line, we got a couple of these. Carrington, I would tear down Independence Center and build it there. I don't really see the value of moving the stadium 10 minutes from where it is. Like, what makes that location better than where they are? All of us have finally come to the conclusion that the Royals are not going to be there too much longer. The Royals are moving. You might not want them to move, but there is no chance that the Royals are renovating their new stadium. They have never given you any reason to think that they are at least open to the possibility of renovating. The Chiefs have at least explored the option of renovating. It is at least one of the options on this survey that they are going to stay there. The Royals are not moving. The Chiefs are not moving 10 minutes away to Independence. I'm sorry, they're not moving there. That's not a great location for their stadium to be. They either stay where they are and build a stadium where Kauffman Stadium currently is, or they're moving out by the Legends with a new stadium. I just don't think there is anywhere in the 816 area code that makes any sense for them to build a stadium where they already are. That is a better location than where they are. Maybe there's a place up north near the airport that would make sense, but the Chiefs are going to do all of this to move 10, 15 minutes from KCI? That doesn't really seem that logical to me. And where is the amount of space that they would possibly need for to be able to go out there? Like, that's the thing with the Chiefs that is much different to me than with the Royals. The Chiefs really need space, not just for the football stadium, for all the other stuff too. And that's what makes the tailgating experience at Arrowhead so great, is you have all of that space. You've got an expansive parking lot. There might not be a team in the league that has more parking spots and more parking space than what the Kansas City Chiefs have. So where else in the city are you going to get all of that infrastructure that's already in place? I just don't think moving to Independence makes a lot of sense.
I also would say, and I don't know Independence that well. I'm not going to come on here and act like I'm the Independence aficionado. But I feel like the Chiefs' next stadium is going to have Kingdom Plaza. It's going to have hotels, shops, restaurants next to it. It's going to be more than a stadium and a parking lot, which is what Arrowhead is right now, a stadium and a parking lot. It's going to have a big, fancy, top-of-the-line practice facility that they can one day host training camp at, and they can have events there like they do in Dallas. It's going to have shops, restaurants, bars, hotels in the area. I do not believe the Chiefs are building a new stadium, whether it be at the Truman Sports Complex or in Kansas or wherever, and there's going to be like stadium, parking lot, end of building. So when you think about the amount of additions and things you have to add, does the Independence area have enough space and enough pull to get people to stay at the Kingdom Sheraton over there? I don't know it does. It feels like it's Legends or Truman Sports Complex, end of discussion, because of the space they need to build other stuff.
CDOT, why would a Missouri fan want to lose the why would they want to lose the Chiefs to Kansas just because they moved from a current location? I mean, I'm trying to find the best way to answer this. the city has to do a better job of communicating to the people in Missouri what it means to lose the team. They did not do a really good job of it the first time. I'm sorry, they didn't do a really good job of it. They really didn't. It ain't like we're talking about the Chiefs are moving to San Antonio. They're moving out by Sporting Park. A lot of you go over there to Sporting Park. It ain't really that bad. I'm sorry, it's not that bad. I mean, I'm Missouri through and through. It's not that bad going to sporting games. It's okay. It's all right. It has not stopped your interest in soccer at all. In fact, we became the soccer capital because of where, like, no, so it's fine. It'll be fine. It just doesn't make sense to me in Independence. I'm sorry. It doesn't make sense to move it to where it currently is. That is the worst possible option of all of the options that are out there. Someone just texted in. Text line 913-586-7965. CDOT, people can go on the Chiefs website and take the survey if they would like as well. So, yeah, they don't even got to wait for it to be emailed to you. If you want to take the Chiefs survey, you can do that. It is right there on their website. Thank you for that, texter. We appreciate you coming in and sending that text. I'm mad at myself today. Maybe that's why I'm coming off a little perturbed today. For the second time this season, I bet significant money on James Franklin in a big game. That's on me. It's 100% my fault. I cannot be mad at anybody else. I have to be mad at myself today. I'm sitting there in Penn State. They got me all caught up last week and all the hoopla and the excitement. I'm thinking to myself, hey, this Drew Aller kid, he's pretty good. Look at their run game. I talked myself into James Franklin in a big game. I got nobody to blame but myself. I'm making FanDuel donations over here. That's what I am. I'm making FanDuel donations. They don't need any more money. I'm happy to give it back to them, though. They're not going to ever catch me slipping again. Rob, I'm sure there's somebody that's on your parlay ban list. Like, there's a player that every time you bet on him, he just plays terrible. He runs for 32 yards or he shoots 1 for 9 from the field. I have to put Penn State on the parlay ban list. Never again will I bet American currency on Penn State to do anything other than lose an important game. Let's go to the phone lines right now. We're going to continue our trip around the National Football League. We were just in Houston. Let's go to Los Angeles and be joined by Daniel Popper, who covers the Chargers for The Athletic. Daniel, man, happy to have you on the show today, man. We appreciate you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I guess the first question is, how are you? Are you good? There's obviously a lot going on in the where you live. Are you good?
Yeah, we're all safe. Been a week of madness and chaos, devastation and destruction. So it's been a difficult week. My apartment was about 3 miles south of the evacuation zone, south of the Palisades fire on the coast. My sister-in-law evacuated to our place. It was a nervy week, but we made it through okay. And I actually just got to Houston about an hour ago, and I'm talking to you from my hotel room in Houston.
People were giving me a lot of grief for liking this Chargers team. There were only three teams in the AFC that won more games than the Chargers. They were the three contenders in the AFC. I don't think that this Chargers team can make a deep run and win the Super Bowl or anything, but this is a team that has a good coach, a good quarterback, and one of the best defenses in the league. This Chargers team, I think, is a little bit dangerous heading into the postseason.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, those three things are what you're looking for when you're heading into the postseason. Like, do you have a coach that you feel like gives you an advantage? I think Jim Harbaugh does that in terms of the culture that he's built and how he prepares his players. Do you have an elite quarterback? The Chargers have an elite quarterback. And do you have a reliable defense? And that's probably been the biggest story of the season for the Chargers in terms of how they've turned this around. Defensive coordinator Jesse Minter really getting a lot out of the players that return, getting a lot out of the additions that they made via free agency trade, the draft. And they have all three of those things. And if you have all three of those things, you're going to be able to be competitive in these playoff games. And I think that's what will happen here in Houston and if they win moving forward.
What changes have you seen in Los Angeles with the arrival of Harbaugh? We had a lot of conversations, you and I, in the past about Brandon Staley. This team seems far improved from those teams. Where's the biggest differences, biggest changes you've noticed now with this coaching change?
Yeah, I think when you bring in a guy like Jim Harbaugh, who has as much experience as he has and has won as many different places as he has, you just raise the floor. And so you go and you look through the Chargers season, like they have gone into games where they had a talent advantage and where they should win and they've won. And that's a big difference from how it's been with the Chargers in years past. You know, I sort of the juxtaposition that I've offered to a bunch of people is sort of, the Chargers go into New England a couple weeks ago and they beat the brakes off the Patriots 40-7 to make the postseason and clinch their spot. That game was 2 days after Christmas. no Christmas hangover and they get their job done and handle business against a bad team. Now, if you go back to 2021, Brandon Staley's first year in charge, they go to Houston, ironically enough, and play the Texans the day after Christmas. They were 8-6. They were in the mix for the playoffs. This was a game they should have won. The Texans were really bad, and they laid an egg. They gave up 41 points to a bad Texans team. They lost 41-29. Rex Burkhead went for like 150 yards on the ground. And so you look at those two games, very similar situations. You're in the playoff hunt. It's a couple days after Christmas. There's a potential for a Christmas hangover. On one hand, with Jim Harbaugh, they're prepared and they handle business. On the other hand, with Brandon Staley, they lay an egg and they end up missing the playoffs in that season. So you go through the list of these games they've gone into at the Browns, you know, at home against the Saints, you know, at the Panthers in week two, where they've gone into these games and they've just handled business against bad teams. And it's a big reason why they're here. And I give a lot of credit to Jim Harbaugh for how he prepares the team week after week.
Daniel, it's crazy to say this, but it kind of feels like now Justin Herbert went from, to me, maybe being a little bit overvalued probably 18 months ago to now not being respected enough and just not being talked about. We're talking about a quarterback that almost threw for 4,000 yards this year, had 23 touchdowns, and only had 3 interceptions this year with the over 100 quarterback rating. It feels like whenever we talk about the young star quarterbacks in the league, it kind of feels like Herbert's name is now starting to be left off that list.
Yeah, I mean, not for me. I mean, I watch the guy every week, and I, you know, I've been covering him since he joined the league in 2020, and I've been telling everybody that he's elite that entire time, and my opinion hasn't really changed. I think, like, a big part of this when you're talking about, like, national narratives is winning in the postseason. And you talk about young quarterbacks, Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, you know, even throw Patrick Mahomes into that mix, the guys that are really the elite of the elite and the guys that are talked about in that manner, they've won in the playoffs. And Justin Herbert, to this point, does not have a playoff win on his resume. You know, went into Jacksonville, they had a big lead, and obviously we all know what happened in that game. That's the only playoff game he's played in. And so I think to get him into that conversation in terms of a national narrative standpoint, he's got to win the playoffs, and I think that's why this is a big opportunity for him. But, like, I'll tell you this, the last three games that he's played, Broncos in Week 16, Patriots in Week 17, the Raiders in Week 18, I would put this three-game stretch up against any three-game stretch he's had in his career. Like, he's balling. He's protecting the football. I think he's been able to show off his legs a little bit as he's gotten healthier. And then some of the playmaking and throws that he's making are up there among some of the best plays that he's made in his career. So he's rolling on all cylinders, and he has a defense to support him. And I think a big part of this season for him has been realizing that he doesn't have to shoulder the entire franchise, and I think that's what Jim Harbaugh's brought.
Right now, we're talking to Daniel Popper of The Athletic. He covers the Los Angeles Chargers. The stats would suggest that the Chargers have the best defense in the league. Do you feel like they have the best defense in the league?
No. They're like the 10th to 15th best defense, somewhere in there. I think they feasted on bad offenses, which is why you see the scoring defense title technically for them. They're good. They're improved. But they're gettable in certain areas. You know, I think, like, they have to sort of get into the right game script to be really dominant on defense. And that is, you know, stop the run, get into advantageous downs and distances, and let their pass rushers really get after the quarterback. When they've been able to get in those game scripts, they've been really good. But they're susceptible at times to the back end. On the back end, I think they're improved against the run, but not great against the run. And they've had some down moments here in the second half of the season, you know, whether it was against the Ravens, obviously that Bucs game was bad, the first half against the Broncos, where they've been gotten a little bit by some better offenses. So they're very improved. They're good. I think they're, like, reliable in terms of, like, you're going to get a certain level of preparation and play out of them, but I don't think they're necessarily, like, the best defense in the league. They're probably, to me, you know, around 10th to 12th, somewhere in that area.
I want to jump back to the offense for just a bit. I think Ladd McConkey has had a phenomenal season. He was a guy that in Kansas City was kind of thrown out as one of the names. They ended up getting Xavier Worthy, and it certainly worked out for Kansas City, worked out for the Chargers as well. Tell us a little bit more about the season that he's had. And Quentin Johnston, on the flip side, was a guy who was also being talked about. I feel like he hasn't maybe lived up to expectations that people had for him.
Do you know that he had 13 catches for 186 last week?
Yeah, just this whole year, just a lot of it has been just, to me, he doesn't make a lot of those kind of simple routine plays. His hands are a little shakier than I thought they were going to be.
Yeah, so I'll start with Ladd. I mean, coming out, watching him at Georgia and watching the film, you know, during the draft process, like, it was very evident that he had everything you needed to be a really good player in the league. The route running was already at an NFL level. He had 4.39 speed, his understanding of leverages and defenses, great hands, good in contested catch situations, a complete player. The issue for me heading into the season was, the durability. He had a number of injuries at Georgia. He's not a particularly big guy. And so could he withstand the entire season, be able to stay in the field? He's been nicked up, but to his credit, he's battled through an ankle injury, he's battled through a shoulder injury, he's battled through a knee injury, he's battled through a toe injury, and he's been able to be really effective. And I think the big thing is that Justin Herbert likes players that have all of those things that I sort of listed, like good route runner, understanding of leverages, friendly to the quarterback in terms of working back to the football so he's not putting the ball in harm's way. And there's been a lot of trust that's developed as a result. Now, I think they're different players, but Keenan Allen had a lot of those things, which is why I think Justin Herbert and Keenan Allen developed such a strong relationship. But yeah, Ladd is legit. He's pretty much the only guy on the roster that can consistently beat man coverage. And they've been doing some interesting things in terms of bunch formations and stuff to get him open in the second half of the season. So he's a star, full-fledged. Now with Quentin, he obviously had a tough rookie season, but I started noticing even in OTAs and then through training camp that he was a vastly improved player. He's a better route runner. He's better off the line of scrimmage. He's more deceptive in how he plays. He's just more well-rounded as a receiver. He's improved in really all areas, some of the finer details of the position. And I think you've seen that. I mean, he has 8 touchdowns on the season. He's come up with some big catches. I think that game, where he had, 13 catches for 186 yards last week was really like a big step forward to him and maybe the culmination of what had been like an impressive amount of improvement when you watch him on film. He obviously had drops this season. He had a big drop against the Ravens, but he's been better in contested catch situations. And I think that, when he was drafted, he was a developmental project. And I give receivers coach Sanjay Lal a ton of credit for getting a lot more out of Quentin Johnson than I certainly expected. And he's really improved as a player, in my opinion.
Last question here. We talked about pressure for some of the top quarterbacks in the National Football League. I kind of feel like Herbert should at least be in that conversation. He's obviously not going to be number one, not a lot of Super Bowl expectations for them, but Herbert is too good of a quarterback to not have a playoff win at this stage in his career.
Yeah, I agree. I think like at a certain point, he signed the big contract. He's being paid like one of the best quarterbacks in the league. And so, I would expect him to go out tomorrow in Houston and have a really, really good game and lead the Chargers to a win. Now, part of it too is that like sometimes you're going to need help from other areas of the roster. And I think the reason why I think they're going to win tomorrow is because he's playing at a high level. I expect a good performance from him. I expect him to get his first playoff win. But I think you just have a more reliable defense and a more reliable team around him. You have better offensive line play. You got 2 really good tackles. The team around him is just better. But it's a big moment for him. In terms of like the national narrative and getting himself into that sort of discussion with some of these other guys, like this is when you have to show up. You got to go play a good game and you got to win.
That is our guy, Daniel Popper, joining us on the show today. Daniel, man, take care of yourself, man. We appreciate you.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. That is Daniel Popper joining us on the show today. He covers the Chargers for The Athletic. Coming up on the other side, we are going to create our own Hall of Fame. I'll explain the rules next. Keep it right here. So drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5, The Fan. Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
All right. We'll get back to the NFL in just a bit. But before we do that, I want to take a little bit of time to have a Hall of Fame discussion. Now, we love Hall of Fame discussions on this show. You guys know how I feel about Mike Evans. I would not vote for Mike Evans in the Hall of Fame. I think Mike Evans is a great player. I don't think that he is an all-time great player, which is what I think the Hall of Fame should be. But I'm always down to debate it. Do you think Marshawn Lynch should get in? Should Frank Gore get in? I'm always here for those kind of conversations. We are going to create our own Hall of Fame. This is going to be a little bit different. This is going to be based on guys that you do not trust in big games, in big situations. This is the please stay away from me Hall of Fame. This is the I can't do it Hall of the Fame. This is the you choke in big game Hall of Fame. Rob, please give me the appropriate music so we can do this segment some justice here today, my friend. The first person I would like to put in this Hall of Fame is James Franklin, head coach at Penn State. At Penn State, he is 1-15 against top 5 opponents. He is 4-20 against top 10 opponents. 15-29 against ranked teams. He also has played 21 games against Michigan and Ohio State. They've only won 4 of those games. I believed in you, James Franklin. Now I'm sitting here looking like a fool. Why did I believe in you? Why did I believe in Drew Aller? Why did I think that you were going to win a game against a good team at a neutral site? Sure, you beat up on SMU and Boise State. You had to play a team that actually is good, that actually recruits at your level. And of course, you whiz down your leg. First ballot. Stay away from me, Hall of Fame. Chokes in big game Hall of Fames. I am happy to induct this person. James Franklin, head coach of the Penn State Nittany Lions.
I am going to induct the original big game nickname. Bob Stoops is going to my Hall of Fame.
He's got a title.
Do you know how many Heisman winners he had that have titles? He had Jason White win a Heisman. Did he win a title? He had Baker Mayfield win a Heisman. Did he win a title? He had guy after guy after guy, and he had one title. He lost to Tebow. He lost to Bama. He lost to Clemson. I can name all the times Bob Stoops came up second best in a national conversation. Yeah, he won the Big 12. Super duper. You're at Oklahoma. You should win the Big 12. You should aspire to more. And one title from 1999 through the end of his time in Oklahoma is too little. Big game Bob. He is my induction into the failure Hall of Fame.
I hate to do this because this man is a legend. Rest in peace. I gotta put Marty Schottenheimer in this category. Marty Schottenheimer coached in 18 postseason games. His team only won 5 of them, never made it to the Super Bowl. And it wasn't just that his teams would lose in these games. They would be some heartbreakers. The drive, the fumble, Lynn Elliott. This was all under Marty Schottenheimer's watch. Marty, I'm sorry. You are why this Hall of Fame was created. Rob has called it the Failure Hall of Fame. You have to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. Why in the world would you want Marty Schottenheimer to be your coach in an important football game? Sure, maybe you want him in October. You would never want him in January. He is the Lamar Jackson of head coaches. I gotta put him in this Hall of Fame. Marty Schottenheimer, again, rest in peace, Marty.
My next induction is staying in the coach lane, Jerry Sloan. Now, Jerry Sloan got a little bit of a raw deal. He was a coach of a great team in the 90s.
And no one gets Mike twice.
No one gets to win titles in the 90s except for Michael Jordan. There was one person who was allowed, and it wasn't Jerry Sloan's team. But Jerry Sloan is one of the winningest coaches in the history of NBA basketball. He did it in Utah. He is a king there. He has done everything short of win a title. But you know what? He still came up short of winning a title. Jerry Sloan, Mr. Always a bridesmaid, never the bride. He is my induction into the big game loser Hall of Fame.
I hate to put this person in there, but if we're doing this and this is going to be the Hall of Fame, this is going to be the absolute best of the best. I got to put Kyle Shanahan in this, right? I can maybe take Kyle Shanahan out of this Hall of Fame, but he has to go in this Hall of Fame, right? Look what you did as the coordinator for the Atlanta Falcons. You blew the biggest lead in Super Bowl history. Look at what you've done in the Super Bowl. You haven't been trustworthy in these moments. Sure, you can get us to the moments, but can you get us over the hump? If I'm keeping the coach's theme here, which it sounds like that's what we're doing, I got to nominate Kyle Shanahan. For the I cannot trust you in a big game Hall of Fame.
We are in the same vein with my next induction. Marv Levy. The Buffalo Bills went to the Super Bowl 4 times.
He got a statue out there.
He got a statue. 4 Super Bowl appearances. 4. He has been one of the best coaches. He's probably the best coach in the history of the Buffalo Bills. Period. They went to 4 Super Bowls. They lost all of them. He is, his resume is missing one thing, and it's a Super Bowl. And it wasn't just like Jerry Sloan. He ran into the Cowboys. That definitely happened. But he lost to the Giants. He lost to everyone in that game. Marv Levy had Jim Kelly, a Hall of Famer. Andre Reed, a Hall of Famer. Thurman Thomas, a Hall of Famer. Bruce Smith, a Hall of Famer. And he took them to the Super Bowl 4 times. And then he got to every year go to the locker room and tell his guys, guys, it's tough to lose, but we'll be back here next year. Oh, Marv Levy, I'm sorry, buddy. You're in the Hall of Fame.
James Franklin, I'm still mad at you. Can we just go through these numbers very quickly? And I promise you we'll get back to the NFL. Do you guys understand that yesterday we watched something that we may never see again? Honestly, we may never see it again. We saw Penn State throw the ball 23 times yesterday. They ran it 42 times. So we're talking about they ran 65 offensive plays yesterday. Not a single wide receiver caught a pass. Not a catch. Not a yard. Not a nothing. Just out there for cardio, blocking, and vibes. I mean this in all seriousness. If you talk to me about Drew Aller as an NFL prospect, I'm blocking you. Don't call. Don't text. Don't carrier pigeon. Don't direct message me. If you were talking to me about Drew Aller as an NFL prospect, please keep him away from me and my family. I saw everything I needed to see in the semifinal against Notre Dame. I saw everything I needed to see. He was 12 of 23 for 135 yards. He didn't throw a touchdown. He threw a terrible interception at the end of the game. He ran for negative 4 yards. Just FanDuel donations is what we had with Penn State. I'm mad at myself. I'm mad at myself because I bought in. I'm mad at myself because I believed in Penn State. I thought that it was going to be different. I really did. It was not different. It was the same. It was the same Nittany Lions is what they've been. Coming up at the top of the hour, we're going to take our final trip around the league. We're going to head to Denver. So there are 4 teams that the Chiefs could possibly play in the second round. The Broncos are one of those teams. How likely is it for the Broncos to pull off the upset? We'll find out together. Keep it right here. It's The Drive on 96.5 The Fan.